Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootniblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero-G Draft Strategy, and in this podcast, Blake and I are going to talk about the biggest hot shots and have-nots of the last couple of weeks. Let's get it. Now, of course, I have your friend and my best friend who hosts all of the fantasy hockey podcasts known to man, Blake Creamer, here with me. Blake, how are we feeling tonight?
I can't stop and I won't stop. Oh, my God. I love fantasy hockey. If you're not aware, I actually I had a great day today, Nate. I actually was a guest host over at the Keeping Carlson Fantasy Hockey Podcast. I did that with a round table of Dauber hockey writers, and we had a super time. Yeah, we were just chatting fantasy hockey, just a bunch of hens clucking away. It was really nice. And also, buddy, I know I was talking to Nate offline here, but basically all my matchups are riding on the Seattle Columbus game. And does anyone want to watch a Seattle Columbus game? God, oh, this is freaking horrible. Oh, it's going off, but I don't know. How you doing, my man? I'm watching this with bated breath.
The only thing I'm really watching is our matchup in the Experts League, because I've been catching up to you all week since you had a hot start, and now I just need a few more Bjorkstrand points, and no. I kind of need Joey Decord to drop the ball here. That's also something I need. So I don't know how likely that is. We just got on. The game just started, and it's already 3-0. I'm a little bit worried that they're pulling Tarasov. I haven't seen anything about that just yet, but that wouldn't be shocking given how the early game's gone here. So you might pull this one out, sad to say, but my team's pretty solid, and they're coming for you, man. So just watch your back, all right?
This is horrible. You know, Nate and I, we're just looking at the standings. Like, we both have the two highest scores of the entire week. So whoever loses our matchup is going to be a ridiculous beat. It's going to be very hurtful. And I just hope it's not me. Bjorkstrand did get an assist on that third goal, by the way. So what the Excellent. Hell? Come on. He truly is in the jerk store.
All right. Well, let's talk some news and notes from around the league. There's not much, actually, since our last pod there on Friday night. So we got Patrick Laine, who has now entered the NHLPA Players Assistance Program. Obviously, that's always comes with an indefinite timeline, so we won't know anything there until there's some sort of official release. Philip Hedl out for the season now, unofficially, wasn't released by the club, but it's kind of a badly kept secret that he's suffered another concussion. He's worked all of the way back from having another, sounds like a pretty severe concussion, kept him out for a long time. So really tough to see. Hope, honestly, at this point, it starts to become a little bit more about the player's well-being overall and less about the hockey. So best wishes out to him for sure. Justin Falk was held out again with an undisclosed injury. I think at this point, they've only got one more game before the All-Star break in this week upcoming. There's a good chance he's not back until after that, in my mind. And lastly, the Vegas Golden Knights activated William Karlsson from IR, so it sounds like he's ready and good to go. I'm not sure why they would do it just yet. They don't have any games before the All-Star break, so I thought that they'd, in most cases, I think you can get cap savings if you hold a guy on IR, but regardless, at least that gives us some clarity for fantasy purposes. William Karlsson is back. I actually had him on IR because I was streaming him the week that he happened to go on IR, and so I just threw him on IR because I had the room, and he came back, and I dropped him. So that's about where I'm at with William Karlsson these days. Maybe he'll be good again, but I'm not banking on it just yet. Anything sticking out for you, Blake? Any news I might have missed?
Oh my God, that William Karlsson news, that's groundbreaking. Oh my God.
Definitely. All right, let's talk some hot shots here. We got to start things off with our boy Kirill Kaprizov, 6 goals, 9 points in his last 5 games, skating almost 22 minutes a night is Kirill Kaprizov, single-handedly trying to will the Minnesota Wild to victories. And that's a pretty tall task these days. If you've checked out any of Minnesota's games, you will absolutely know what I'm talking about there. But yeah, Kirill Kaprizov absolutely doing the thing over the last little bit. 144th in shots per 60, 218th in individual scoring chances for per 60. Kind of ironically, this is one of the worst stretches of the season for him in terms of the underlying stats, but the pucks are going in. So, you know, it's just a case of things evening out. I've said this about a million other players, and I'll say it about a million more before the season's out. Sometimes you're doing everything right and the puck's not going in. Sometimes you're doing everything wrong, but the puck is going in. And sometimes you just don't need to take that second and third shot because the pucks are going in. So I think this is obviously good for Kaprizov. Get the confidence up. I'm absolutely certain he'll get back to form in terms of the shots on goal and the scoring chances sooner rather than later. I'm not worried about that being a little bit down. Just checking out the game log, like 5-5, 3-3, 5. And then he had one game where he had 0 shots randomly, and then 2 shots, 4 shots. Like if you just take out the one outlier game there, then I'm pretty sure this number would look a lot better on the season. 71st in shots per 60, 47th in individual scoring chances for per 60. On ice numbers, even better. Clearly the driver of the bus in Minnesota on the season, pacing now for 37 goals, 88 points. Do you think there's some headroom still here for Kaprizov beyond this pace, Blake? Or given the state of the Wild, is this what we should expect as a ceiling?
Yeah, I think there's headroom, but it's mostly based on some of this man's previous numbers, right? Like if you look at the last 3 seasons of Kirill Kaprizov, in his big season there in 2021, he was approaching that 10 shots on goal per 60 that we like to see. I think he was at 9.86 at 5-on-5. Then the next year it went down to 7.97, and then he's cooking at 6.88 this year. That's a bit surprising, actually, like just considering, you know, this guy is the engine that drives the bus here in Minnesota, right? So he's shooting a lot less. His IPP is down. Like he, you know, for reference, he was 75% last year, 52% this year, right? And his scoring chances are way down. They're down by, you know, almost a scoring chance and a half per 60. So I don't know what's going on there. I do think he's not an 88-point player. I think this is a 100-point player, but yeah, he's got to up his shots. That's for damn sure. And I do worry about Minnesota a little bit. Like if they keep losing, you know, are they going to, like, is he going to lose minutes basically? Like if they're in a lot of games that where they're blown out or they're playing for nothing, like why would you trot Kaprizov out there for 20 minutes a night? You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So yeah, I'm keeping an eye on it, but yeah, Kaprizov is a full go. This guy's a beauty. I do think there's 100-point upside, but I'd like to see those shots on goal come up. And this stretch here, 9 points in 5 games, it's a great place to start, right? Now let's get those metrics going.
For sure. Yeah, the one thing that really sticks out to me with Kaprizov right now, 65% IPP, his first 3 seasons in the league, 78%, 80%, 77%. You still got plenty of headroom there on the IPP for him to be collecting, what is that, like an additional somewhere in between 15 and 20% points. Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of headroom there in my mind getting him back to, I think I projected him for just over 100 points, if I remember correctly. So
yeah, me too.
Yeah. I think he is having a down season in terms of some of his individual stats, but I don't really fault him for that, to be quite honest with you. It's an outlier compared to the last 2 seasons. I'm not really concerned about it overall, like in terms of his long-term, like dynasty or keeper kind of outlook. But even despite that, he's gotten the kind of appropriate rebound and on-ice shooting percentage that I predicted. Yep. It's really just been a little bit lower on the shooting percentage overall, and the IPP being really down. So hats off to Kirill Kaprizov. I still think there's more to give here, but happy to see it going in the right direction for him, at least personally, in the last little bit. All right. Who's this next player here? Blake, can you give us the lead in?
Come on, Bobby. Let's go party. Ivan Babashev, keep on doing what you do. I did an improv. I did a scat solo, and it didn't work out. We'll edit it in post.
He definitely deserves a solo at this point. 2 goals, 9 points in his last 5, skating just under 17 minutes. The minutes are up. getting a bigger role with some of the injuries that they've sustained. 137th in shots per 60, 77th in individual scoring chances for per 60. So some of the underlying numbers looking a little better than they have for most of the season. On the season, 340th in shots per 60, which is usually more where Barbashev hangs out and why Barbashev has never really elevated himself beyond a streamer in my eyes. I do think like this is most likely just a flash in the pan, but it might be one that you want to hang on to for a little bit here. As long as he's getting this extra bit of deployment, I'm kind of into it. So as long as the minutes stay up, I'm okay with Barbashev, but he is right on the bubble for me. I don't know if you see anything different with Barbashev, Blake.
Yeah, not really. It's you ride it while it's hot and you drop him when he's not. All right. Hot and not rhyme. And that's good podcasting right there. But guys with metrics like this, underlying metrics, they never feel good to hold on to, right? Because the floor can fall at any point, right? That said, like you said, he's getting more deployment, and Jack Eichel's injured, right? So they're able to prioritize this guy a little bit more, and he has value in Bangers Cats leagues as well. This guy's a super beefer, right? But that line, Marchessault, Barbashev, and Nicholas Roy, what the hell? These guys are flying right now. It's a good looking line, and they're all popping off at the moment. So, I mean, we could talk about any of those as hot shots, but to me, I think Marchessault is really the only one that I'm really feeling there. That obviously is a must own. And yeah, like, I think Marchessault is pacing for 66 points. Barbashev's pacing for 49. So that seems about right to me. Maybe 55 if he somehow continues this pace, but I just don't see it. But I've got him in two spots right until he stops producing.
Fair enough. Let's keep rolling. Talk about Adam Henrik and Troy Terry here. Obviously, both of the Anaheim Ducks. Henrik has 4 goals, 8 points in his last 5. Terry also has 8 points, 3 goals there in the same time period. Henrik just over 19 and a half minutes average time on ice. Terry just over 19 minutes. Both kind of doing the thing in terms of the individual stats. 44th in shots per 60 for Henrik, 58th for Terry. Individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 86th for Henrik, 39th for Terry. Both looking good. Terry is kind of taking Henrik to the bank on the on-ice stats. 132nd to 184th in Corsi 4 per 60, 70th to 135th in scoring chances 4 per 60 for Terry there. On the season now, Terry pacing for 25 goals, 62 points. Henrik for 26 goals, 55 points. Where are you taking these guys? Do you think that Henrik can sustain this level at least as like a priority streamer kind of level? 26 goal, 55 point pace is usually where I'd kind of say somebody's a priority streamer whenever that team has a good schedule. Is Terry more than that? Do you think he has headroom beyond 62 points?
Yeah, good question. That's a great way to describe Adam Henrik, in my opinion. Yeah, priority streamer. Right? 55 points. That seems reasonable to me. 50 to 55 points for Adam Henrik, especially with the injuries they have here in Anaheim. Like maybe if Zegras is healthy, you know, we're not talking about Adam Henrik, right? But yeah, Zegras is gone. So he's the next man up and he's doing stuff with it. So Henrik is a guy I would definitely pick up if Anaheim had a good schedule. He also gets some nice, he's got 4 shorthanded points. I just noticed that on the season. So that's kind of a nice little piece as well. But yeah, it's not a player you're ever getting excited about, right? But it's been a nice little stretch. But for me, Troy Terry, yeah, this guy's, he's a must-own player. We've talked about Troy Terry on and off through the season. He's had his, you know, ups and downs. And I'm glad to see that he's kind of popping off currently here. A 62-point pace, I think that should be floor Troy Terry. But that might be where he lands, honestly. Like 62, 65 points. I think he has a 75-point ceiling. I think that's kind of closer to where we projected him, but it might not happen. I mean, the Ducks are not a good team, and with Zegras out, like, and they've been kind of prioritizing other players as well at times, like Mason McTavish, Frank Vetrano. They're getting a bunch of minutes as well. So yeah, it's, I could see Troy, I could see this being where Troy Terry lands season end here, but yeah, it's a nice player, and hopefully you held on to him or picked him up off waivers, because that's where he lived for a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, he's still widely available in a lot of leagues. I think, what was it, 38% rostered is coming to my mind about in the waiver wire show. So he's definitely out there in a lot of people's leagues right now. So he's available. Looking at the underlying stats for Terry, He's actually down on the individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 from last year. I think a lot of that can probably be attributed to the lack of Zegras or really any other kind of top line center that can really elevate Terry's game. And so he's been forced to do it on his own. He has kind of done it on his own, in my opinion, the last little bit. He was obviously ice cold to start the season, but really started to find his own over the last couple of months or so. I think Terry could potentially be a 70 plus point pace guy from here on out. I think he's got potential beyond that, but it's unlikely to be unlocked in Anaheim. As far as Henrique goes, I'm really cautious. I don't think he's more than a streamer. He's had some nice runs here. The IPP is high, the shooting percentage is high. The on-ice shooting percentage feels a little bit high for me as well, just considering the power play unit he's a part of, the even strength line he's a part of, the fact that he gets a bunch of his minutes on the penalty kill. Just overall, I'm not just ready to go out and say that Adam Henrique is an absolute must roster or hang on to at all costs. There's honestly probably a few other guys that I'd stream from Anaheim. Leo Carlson I would consider, Mason McTavish I would consider, Troy Terry, I would obviously take over Adam Henrique the way that I've talked about the two. You could probably gather that, but there's definitely some other guys that I'd also consider, and would probably come down to deployment at the time of the stream and a bunch of other factors at the time of the stream. So I don't think Henrique is much more than a guy that they're kind of showcasing leading up to a trade deadline here, that they'll probably be looking to move off some players. So that, if and when that happens, I'd expect Henrique to fill like a middle six role for some team. I'm never planning for a player to get traded either, so I'm not really taking that into account and trying to hold on to him so that maybe he'll go to a perfect situation, like get traded to Toronto and popped on the Matthews Marner line or something like that. Like, that's the scenario you're dreaming of, but like, what are the actual percentage chances that that actually happens, and what are you giving up in your lineup by hanging on to somebody just praying for a dream scenario to happen? So that's not the way I like to play. I don't think Henrique is more than a streamer, but obviously he's having a good season, and the underlying stats have started to come up now, which is obviously a good sign as well. I still want to see more, see him sustain it for longer, but it's nice to see in the interim. Let's move back to Vegas and talk about Nicolas Roy. 2 goals, 8 points in his last 5. Similar to Barbashev, skating about 17 minutes a night. Underlying stats are not great here. 246th in shots per 60, 139th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. Just having a big week and big last few games here for sure. He's been playing with Marchessault and Barbashev, so obviously you're getting some of the correlation there between Barbashev and Roy. But on the season, he's now pacing for 18 goals, 52 points. That's, again, kind of like a solid streamer range. The one number that's halfway decent from his season-long underlying stats is the individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 at 112th in the league over the entire season. Do you have any interest in Watt, even as a streamer? Like, is he a priority streamer? Is he approaching Adam Henrique levels? Is he a cut below that? Where does he rank for you given this latest hot streak?
He can only dream of reaching Adam Henrique levels. All right. I'm sorry. And I call this man Nicolas Roy. And I'm just going to keep doing it regardless of whether it's right or not. I'm calling this man Nick Roy. All right. I like two names. Also, like, shout out to Succession. Right. I mean, that's the last thing. There you go. It's Nicolas Roy until further notice. But anyways, I'm not very interested in this player. Yeah. He's popping off. And when Vegas has a good week, you stream him in. But this week, like, you're not rostering Nick Roy. Like, or Nicolas Roy. Sorry, I'm going to try it one time properly. He's actually pacing for more points than Barbashev, which is weird, right? Like, he's played a little bit less, I think. But yeah, he's found some chemistry with his line mates. And, you know, Marchessault popping off for Hattie the other day. Like, he's kind of riding in the sidecar, right? It's Barbashev and Roy in the sidecar, and Marchessault is on the bike, all right? And we got a weird trifecta of Vegas Golden Knights with their golden buckies. I don't know what's going on. I'm not interested in this player at all. He's a good streamer if Vegas has a good schedule, and that's that.
Yeah, for sure. It'll obviously be interesting to see what happens with Carlson coming back and then Eichel after that. See where this guy slots in the lineup. Typically, he's been a third liner, just elevated because of injury of late and producing to his credit. Let's move on. Let's talk about JJ Paterka. 5 goals, 7 points in his last 5, skating just 15 and a half minutes a night on average, 23rd in shots per 60, 33rd in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 over this stretch, making some really good music over there with Dylan Cousins of late. I'm pretty in on Paterka. Like, you look at his overall numbers on the season, 47th in shots per 60, 96th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. The on-ice numbers don't look as good, but he's been in the middle six for pretty much the entire season. So he hasn't, you know, basically the top, nearly the top 100 players in all of these metrics are guys who get like top power play exposure and get a bunch of power play minutes, and that's not been Paterka. So I'm not going to fault him too much for being ranked down in some of those, just given the deployment that he's had so far, and also like given how bad Cousins was at the start of the season, who is one of his typical line mates. Yeah, there just wasn't anybody to elevate Paterka. He was doing it himself. On the season now, on pace for 30 goals, 57 points. I'm pretty interested in Paterka. Like, I don't think the problem here is that you feel like the top power play is pretty entrenched. And even when there's been openings, it's been between Cousins and Mittelstadt who have gotten those first looks. Do you think that there's upside for Paterka, or is he just kind of sentenced to this role of like really good second liner who scores at like a 25 to 30 goal pace and a 50 to 55 point pace?
Yeah, I'm kind of more on the latter there. Yeah, it's unfortunate, right? Because I don't know about you, but every time I go to the waiver wire and like I sort by season rank, the first guy is always JJ Paterka. It's like, oh damn. Like I don't want a guy that's getting 14 minutes a night on power play too. Right. But like you said, the underlying metrics have been stupid for this guy. Oh, you're stupid good. Right. Like he's bubbling under the surface, just needing that opportunity, needing that deployment. And if he ever gets it, I think we're looking at a 70 point player, right? Like a minimum. I like this player a lot, but yeah, and I'm glad he's popping off right now, but that's on, you know, an 88% IPP over the last 5 games, 31% shooting over the last 5 games. Like, yeah, obviously he's going off, but it's not something that I trust moving forward, right? I think he's a great supplementary piece. He could be on a roster, and that makes total sense. Like a 57 point pace. Yeah, you can roster a player like that, especially with these underlying metrics, but I don't expect him to go to power play one unless there's injuries. And yeah, he's in that middle six. So I don't know. I'm out on JJ Paterka because it's not exciting, but like if there's any change in deployment, I'm grabbing him immediately.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at as well. Like, really, I just want to be checking out where he's fitting into the lineup. It's a player that I want to have kind of at the forefront of my mind. Yep. And not just let him be somebody else in my league gets whenever that promotion does happen, if it does happen. So he's definitely somebody that I want to be keeping a close eye on and watching for any sort of movement in the Buffalo lineup. Like, there are some teams I feel like too, where like, I just kind of don't care about the lines. And I don't think that it's going to matter that much, no matter who gets elevated. Like, I'm just not excited about any of the players who could get elevated. But Buffalo is not one of those teams, because I do think that Paterka is a guy who, if he gets elevated, I'm constantly watching to see if Cousins is on the top power play, because that's a guy that I'm interested in, right? So these kind of things, sometimes there are just teams that you got to watch a little bit more closely than others and be the first to move if something does break for one of these players with the good underlying stats. Another player with some good underlying stats as of late, Pia Suter from your hometown, Vancouver Canucks. He's got 4 goals, 6 points in his last 5, doing pretty much all that damage in the last 3 here. In fact, all of that damage in the last 3 since getting elevated to the Miller-Besser line and the top power play unit. Pia Suter's been on a heater. He's got 4 shots, 3 shots, couple of power play points all mixed in there, but he's 4th in the entire league in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 over the last little bit while skating over 17 minutes a night. So he's getting a good combo there. On ice stats look great, 44th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 15th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. What do we make of Pia Suter, and are you staying up for the Monday rollover tonight, Blake, to add some Pia Suter? I'm not asking for any of our leagues together, just FYI.
You bet your sweet Bippy I am. Damn, I'm in. I'm in for this. I mean, as long as he's getting this deployment, I'm in, right? It's a no-brainer to me. This guy's a Swiss Army knife. I've said that before, but he can play up and down the lineup, but he's playing with Brock Besser and JT Miller at even strength, and he's on top power play. And I don't see top power play going away. They're not going to give it back to Kuzmenko. This guy's, you know, he can't even get out off the bench in the third period. Neither can Ilya Makhachev. So yeah, they're loving Suter and what he's bringing to the table, and he's got chemistry with these guys. So I am absolutely in on Pius Suter. I think this is a player that not a lot of other fantasy managers are on. And the good thing is we've got another week to let this man cook, right? Vancouver has a great schedule next week. They play four games in the second week of the two-week matchup, right? So you could very easily go grab Pius Suter this, you know, on Monday morning and just hold him for your lineup and, you know, use that week to sort of assess if you're going to keep him moving forward, right? I'm not saying he's going to be a rest of season hold, but with this type of deployment and look at these shots, this is excellent. And then fourth overall in individual scoring chances, 4 for 60. Damn. Yeah. I'm in on this player, and I think you need to get him. Like, he's earned a 1 week stream for us to suss out what he's capable of doing here.
Yeah, I just want to make the point that this is exactly the kind of player that I like to be in on and find out, because he does have the good schedule in the week upcoming. And so you're looking at a guy who the underlying metrics look good. The deployment looks really good. He's 1% rostered in Yahoo right now. So yeah, he's definitely available in pretty much all of your leagues. So you go out and you add Pius Suter now. I was saying on the waiver wire show that I wasn't sure if I really wanted to be in on Suter because I wasn't sure how long the power play deployment was going to last. I mean, he scored another power play point in the last game. Power play was working. It has to be the odds on favorite at this point. And just given the metrics and everything going on, it would be pretty surprising at this point for them to change it up for the first game back from the All-Star break. So I am now kind of shifting my tune on that to say that I am in on Pius Suter. He's a guy that, like you say, you can grab him, use him for that week as a streamer. If it doesn't work out, if things change by the end of the week, then you just drop him. You didn't waste anything to acquire him. You don't have to feel super invested. You know, if the shots go away, the underlying metrics go away, the deployment's still there, but he's not putting up points anymore, you can still drop him. Like, you don't have to feel super invested just because of deployment or anything. You can really use this week upcoming as that kind of trial period and see what you really think might be the future moving forward. But at the moment, he's producing. And in terms of like rest of season, I'm with you. I don't really think that this is a player that's probably going to pop off for the entire season from this point onward. He's played three full seasons in the league at this point and never really popped in any sort of metric that we've looked at. Granted, he's been on some pretty bad teams, Chicago and Detroit, so he hasn't really had this kind of exposure to top-end players, and his individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, up at 9 this year. That's definitely the best of his career, so credit to him for that. But overall, just given the track record here, you just can't get too excited and say like, oh yeah, based on three games, now the Pius Suter is the guy for the rest of the season. So preaching a little bit of caution there, but definitely a guy that, just given the schedule, everything lining up, this is a perfect time to grab a guy like this and just see what you have. And maybe he turns into something, maybe he does turn into that rest of season hold, but at least you get this pretty great opportunity where he's going to fit into your lineup perfectly. He's going to be that perfect stream for you, and you find out what you have. All right, before we get into have-nots, I got to take a moment and say, if you're not in the Apples and Genos Discord server, what are you doing? It's absolutely free. There's over 1,000 fantasy hockey managers in there talking fantasy hockey all day and all night. I can't keep up with it anymore. I don't even attempt to. I do answer all of the questions from our dear patrons. However, if you would like to become an Apples and Genos patron for just $5 a month, I guarantee answers to all your questions. I'm doing that in the patron-only section of the Discord. And if you're looking for somebody to give you a review on your team, you know, we're heading in toward playoff time now. People are starting to lock in on where they're going to be, trying to lock in that bye, trying to lock in their playoff schedules. All of these sorts of things are starting to happen now. So if you want a team review, then you can do that in the $10 per month tier. You could even join up for a month, get your team review, and then bounce if you so needed to. I wouldn't hold it against you. Also want to mention Mark Barber, 18 Skaters, all the great great work he's doing on the Apples and Genos website, www.applesandgenos.com. He's posting daily summaries every single day, goes over all of the biggest performers in all these underlying metrics that we talk about. He's detailing all of that on the Apples and Genos website every single day. It's terrific work, and I really think it deserves way more views than it gets currently. So I'm going to keep plugging it on here. Lastly, if this is being helpful to you, if all of this stuff that we, Blake and I rattle on about every single week is helpful to you, if you could give something back, the best thing you could do is leave us a like and a subscribe on the YouTube channel or rating and review on the podcast provider of your choice. That's all of my spiels, Blake. Are you ready for some have-nots?
Oh my God, you're jacking me up over here, buddy. Let's talk about the have-nots. I'm stoked.
All right. First off, we got to talk about Kyle Connor. Things have not been the smoothest since returning. I know they got some injuries there, so I want to, you know, preface things with that. Velarde's been out. Scheifele's been out. They've been dealing with some things, but Connor's been getting 20 minutes a game, has just one goal in his last five games to show for it. Are you at all worried about Kyle Connor? Because this is coming back from an injury, right? Like, we know what Kyle Connor is. We feel pretty confident about that. But because he's coming back from an injury and he's not lighting the lamp the way that he was before, are you a little bit worried that there could be some sort of situation underlying here?
No. I'm mildly concerned, but I don't think there's a situation that's going to affect him rest of season. Maybe there's a situation that's affecting him currently while he kind of gets back up to speed, right? I think he was kind of on the early end of his, you know, diagnosis of when he was supposed to be back, right? So he's just getting his legs here. And like you said, with the injuries there on the Jets, but I know you're going to talk about his underlying metrics. Like, they all look good, right? And this is, you know, he's pacing for 77 points right now. Like, this guy's a prime buy low on Kyle Connor. Winnipeg's a wagon. They're going nuts this year, right? Regardless of the injuries. And this guy's going to be a big part of it. He's the main piece of it, to be honest, right? So the fact that they're able to do what they're doing with him kind of getting shut out in the last four games, like, I think that bodes well, right? He's still shooting. He's getting a crazy amount of deployment. And, you know, in the last five games, he's shooting 4.8%. You think that's going to stick? I don't think so. All right. This is a, you know, a career 14.6 shooting percentage player, right? So 4.6, no, that's going to go up, right? Very clearly. He's going to get more points on the power play. So yeah, I'm not at all concerned about Kyle Connor. It's annoying for sure. And I'm just realizing as well, Kyle Connor also has a very long neck. And if you go to, you know, frozentools, .com, you can see the picture I'm talking about. Actually, he looks like a thumb to me. He looks like a thumb with a red beard. I don't know. Take that for what it's worth. Shout out to Kyle Connor. Are you Kyle Connor? Anybody see Terminator? All right, great movie. Let's move on. Sorry. He's Kyle Connor. I'm not worried at all. I think we're looking at an 85 to 90 point pace rest of the season once he kind of gets going.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm not worried about Connor either personally. 22nd in shots per 60, 30th in individual scoring chances for per 60 through this cold stretch. He's doing everything but scoring, and he's doing it without the help of his typical line mates and typical top end players there in Winnipeg. I have absolutely no concerns about Kyle Connor. The one thing I would say regarding the buy low is that the Jets have one of the worst schedules pretty much no matter what your fantasy playoffs are. So if you are going out to buy Kyle Connor, I'm not saying don't do it, because obviously he's a difference-making level player, and if you can get him for cheap, you should probably do that regardless of any kind of playoff schedule. But just a word to the wise that if you are starting to think about playoff schedules, if you're sitting pretty in top in first place, cruising towards a buy, something like that, then maybe Kyle Connor is not the guy that you want to look for. Maybe you're looking for somebody who actually adds to your playoff schedule. All right, Blake, let's keep talking about another disappointing player who's drafted pretty highly, Tage Thompson. Just one assist now in his last five games here, averaging just over 18 minutes a night, 181st in shots per 60 over this stretch. That's not good, but he's 12th in shot attempts per 60 over the same time period. So he's firing. He just can't hit the net to save his life. Also 194th in individual scoring chances for per 60, which is kind of unusual. So he's bombing away from distance, just missing the net, I guess. 73rd in Corsi 4 per 60, 118th in scoring chances 4 per 60. Nothing to write home about there. On the season now, pacing for 30 goals, 59 points. That is not what you signed up for if you spent a first round pick on Tage Thompson this year, or even a second round pick on Tage Thompson this year. I did it. I picked Tage Thompson in Kakupful. Been able to do fine regardless of his lack of performance so far, but Yeah, it's a tough spot for Tage Thompson and Tage Thompson managers alike. What's your current read on Thompson, and what do you think his projection should be moving forward?
Yeah, definitely very frustrating, especially with the draft capital you spent on this man. I don't know. That's such a weird discrepancy too in his numbers in the last five games, isn't it, Nate? Like 181st in shots on goal per 60 and 12th overall in individual Corsi for. So, buddy, hit the dang net. What, you know, like that, I like the 12th overall in individual Corsi for. That means like he's still putting pucks on the net. He's just not hitting it. So I know that makes me feel confident that the shots will come back, but yeah, 59 points. Oh no. He paced for 99 last year. So this is obviously not the player he is, but I think we have to temper expectations into what Tage might be this year. And, you know, I haven't heard anything, but I really do think that Tage is playing through a bit of an injury. Like he's not 100%, that he doesn't look right. And like these numbers don't make sense. You know, it's just so hurtful too when you see Buffalo score five goals and Tage gets nothing. Like nothing. Casey Mittelstadt, buddy, he's getting three points a game right now. Dylan Cousins popping off. Tage, nothing. You know, so I do think rest of season, like the underlying numbers are reasonable season long for Tage. But I think they could be a lot better. I think point per game, less than point per game, maybe 70 to 75 point per pace rest of season for Tage, I think is probably floor with an 85 ceiling. But yeah, something's a little off there. Obviously, his power play performance too. Like he's fallen way off there. Last season, he shot something crazy like 24% on the power play. And this year, he's shooting something like 9, right? He got 20 power play goals last year. This year, it's something like 3. It's just ridiculous. So obviously on the power play, he's not been converting near the level that he was last season. And that's a big difference here. So if he can get going on the power play, then we can start, you know, feeling a little bit better about what Tage is bringing to the table. But yeah, for now, I think like a 70 to 75 point pace is probably where Tage lives.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to disagree at this point. I'm trying to make sense of what's going on in Buffalo, like under the hood, like at 5v5, this is a strong team. Yeah. They're top 10 in Corsi for percentage, in scoring chance for percentage, in their actual chance generation, 7th in Corsi 4 per 60. They're down at 14th in scoring chances 4 per 60, but still a top half team. And that's without Tage having a really strong impact on that as of late. So yeah, 5v5, this is a strong team. They do split the time up. Like obviously Tage is not getting like primo superstar level deployment, right? 18 minutes it's good deployment, don't get me wrong, but it's not superstar level deployment like 20 plus minutes like we see with a guy like Kyle Connor. So that part gives you some pause. It just takes a little bit of the edge off the ceiling that a player can give you. I'm not sure about the injury here. There was definitely a quote from the coach that I read at some point that at some point previously he had been playing through an injury, and that could have explained something that was going on at that point. But I've also seen that like he's had some of the hardest shots in the league recently, like the one thing that the NHL edge stats give us. Highest max shot speed amongst forwards this season, 102.08 miles per hour against the Anaheim Ducks on January 23rd.
Dang. Love that.
So whatever it is, it's clearly not hindering him from shooting the puck pretty hard. It's hindering him perhaps from hitting the net, but yeah, so it's really hard to completely suss out what's going on here. I think you just have to kind of view Tage Thompson as a massive boom bust play for the rest of the season. And it's a tough spot to be. Like it's hard to get excited about a guy who you view as a boom bust player. I will say that the Buffalo Sabres do have a pretty terrific playoff schedule for if you're in playing on Yahoo and you're weeks are weeks 23 through 25. You want to be interested in Buffalo players, basically, is what I'm saying, because they do have a pretty great schedule in all of those weeks. So there's that gives you a little bit of interest in potentially acquiring Tage Thompson, especially if his current manager is off on him. Perhaps they are, perhaps they aren't, but maybe it's worth poking around and finding out. You know, even if you have to pay up a little bit, maybe the juice is worth the squeeze there. Even if he doesn't perform terrifically, if he has a great schedule, then maybe he gets there by volume. You know, you can tell yourself a lot of stories if you want to. If you're one of those teams that's, yeah, is in first place, looking at a bye, feeling pretty confident and starting to think about playoff schedules at this point. But yeah, that's my biggest takeaway right now with Tage Thompson, is that this is a really big boom or bust play in my mind. I do believe that everything we've seen from Tage is not a fluke, that he can be a guy who scores at a ridiculous pace. I think this is a guy who's going to have a 50 goal season in the NHL sooner rather than later. I think he's going to push 100 points at some point. I think the talent is all there. It's really just about, for me, whether he can turn around what's been just a really underwhelming season to this point and an underwhelming last stretch as well. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Anze Kopitar. He's got one goal, one assist for 2 points in his last five. I did write this before the game today, and he did get a point in the game today to raise up this a little bit, but the underlying numbers here are so bad. 265th in shots per 60, 340th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On-ice numbers are better, 78th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 140th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. That's still not good, and on the season, his numbers are actually even worse. Like, this is better than his season-long numbers. 372nd in shots per 60 on the season is Anze Kopitar. So if he's not scoring points, he's doing pretty much nothing for your lineup. And that's pretty tough to swallow, especially when he goes through a stretch like this where he can't score. We all know the struggles of the Kings at this point. It's been well documented what they've been going through basically since Christmas. What's your take on Kopitar and the Kings in general at this point, Blake?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Kopitar is more a product of how the Kings are playing in general, right? Like, it's something stinks there, right? And I've heard rumors of, you know, some issues in the dressing room, and obviously Drew Doughty came out and like ripped the team, right? You know, out in public there. So there's trouble in paradise there. That said, I mean, he's still pacing for 72 points. Like, if Kopitar has 72 points at the end of the season, we're probably pretty happy with that, you know, especially where you got this player. Like, this is a guy that, regardless of the metrics, he's going to get points just by being on the ice, right? He plays 20 minutes a night. But yeah, when you dig into the metrics, like, he's his shots and goal per 60 at 5-on-5 down to 5.29 after, you know, three straight seasons of over 6, right? Which is still not great. He's not a great shooter, but he's shooting even less. His IPP is less, and his shooting percentage is less at 5-on-5, and his individual scoring chances for are less. So I think it's also a little bit of decline for this player. Like, this guy's 36, you know, he's out there for a bunch of minutes, but he doesn't have the same zip that he has previously. So I don't know. I still think, like, he's a very valuable player, 72 point pace. I like that. He's still got 14 points on the power play. That's nice. But I would temper expectations with Anze Kopitar. I do, however, think that the Kings are going to figure it out here sooner rather than later. But damn, they lost again today to St. Louis, like, in overtime. Like, they really could have used that one, right? They need a couple victories here. And now going into the All-Star break, that's gonna sting a little bit. But I'm not too worried about Kopitar.
Yeah, I think he kind of is what he is to me. You know what you're going to get, more or less. You're going to have bad stretches. You're going to have good stretches. But if anyone on the Kings should be at kind of like an even keel throughout all of this, it is Anze Kopitar in my mind. Definitely concerning for like a career trend to see these numbers go down. Yeah. But the talent around him has kind of improved. I think Byfield has actually driven that line a little bit this year and actually helped him out in that way. So overall, I think Kopitar is what he is, 25-ish goals, 70-ish points. That's the pace that he's going to live at for the rest of the season in my mind. Moving on to another veteran center in Sean Couturier of the Philadelphia Flyers. Just one assist in his last five games, skating a touch under 20 minutes a night over this stretch. On the season, pacing for 18 goals, 55 points. I think a lot of people would have probably been okay with that from Couturier this season, you know, just in that kind of streamer level territory. But do you think that there's anything more to Couturier, or is this just kind of who he is, just that streamer guy?
I think there's a little bit more. I think he's, in terms of players that you want to own on Philadelphia, you're looking at Travis Konecny, and I think you're looking at Sean Couturier. These are viable players that should probably be on a roster moving forward, and Owen Tippett, obviously. But Yeah, it's a bit of a cold streak, but under the hood, he's looking good, right? This guy's putting a ton of shots on net. He's top line, top power play. The only issue I have with a lot of Philly players is what is John Tortorella going to do and how is he going to deploy these players? It looks to me that Sean Couturier is kind of a little bit immune from that. Like in terms of his ice time, he's getting pretty significant ice time under John Tortorella. So that's not so bad, but I don't know. I remember last season, the second half was basically, it was like the tale of two teams. They had Kevin Hayes out there all the first half, like pumping a bunch of shots, getting a bunch of minutes. And then all of a sudden he's playing 11 minutes a game. You know, so does Couturier get that kind of treatment from Tortorella? I'm not sure, right? Because I do think that they're very committed to a quote-unquote real rebuild in Philadelphia, regardless of what's going on. Like, they never seem to get too upset if they lose. Like, they're just getting their boys out there and trying to do some stuff. So that all said, I think Couturier should be owned, especially with the underlying metrics. But I am watching his deployment pretty closely because, you know, if that starts to trend downwards, like, I think there are going to be better players for you on the wire.
Fair enough. Yeah, my take on Couturier is that he actually does deserve a fair bit better than he's gotten so far. Actually, like, the on-ice numbers that he's supported this year are by far the best of his career. Really impressive stuff overall. So that part is pretty exciting. And honestly, like, the shots per 60 he's got right now would be the best of his career. Individual scoring chances 4 per 60, one of the better marks of his career if it holds for the rest of the season. So that's all good. He's down on IPP. He's down on shooting percentage. I think those things bump back up. I think you're looking at a 65-point player here as a point pace rest of season. For Sean Couturier, 27th in shots per 60 over this last stretch, third in the league in Corsi 4 per 60 through these five games. I think, honestly, Couturier is playing at a really high level right now. It hasn't been reflected in the score sheet, but if there is one player who is immune to the John Tortorella syndrome, I do think it is Sean Couturier. He's just so invaluable to this team in so many ways, and I think he's just incredible. Like, 60-plus percent Corsi 4 percentage, just absolutely incredible stuff from Sean Couturier after recovering from pretty significant injury. So I like to see that, and I do think that the points are coming for Couturier. He's going to start to convert here, and he's going to start to be viewed as more of a hold than a streamer player moving forward. Let's roll over to Vancouver and talk about a guy who's gone a little bit silent of late, Filip Hronek, still averaging 23 minutes a night. The underlying numbers have never been, like, incredible with Hronek, but obviously getting a lot of minutes on a good Vancouver team. He's been able to put up some points. 94th in shots per 60, 57th in on-ice Corsi 4 per 60, 50th in on-ice scoring chances 4 per 60. Kind of just okay. The shots per 60 number, not okay. You want him to be shooting more than that. For sure. But on the season, like, it's not that far off. 77th in the league in shots per 60 on the season. Still pacing for just 5 goals, but 60 points due to all those assists that he's collecting, playing all those minutes on this team. What's your take on Hronek at this point? Do you think he can sustain the 60-point pace for rest of season?
Potentially. He's in a good spot there, but I never viewed Hronek as that type of player, like a 60-point player. I think that's all gravy, right? That's all on top of what he probably should be getting, which I think is like a 45-point defenseman. That to me is where Hronek, that's where I think he should live. So the fact that he's pacing for 60 is a pleasant surprise, right? This is a guy that probably wasn't even drafted in a lot of fantasy drafts, right? But now he's rostered 88%. I had to look at that on Yahoo. Filip Hronek is 88%. My God. Zach Werenski, for reference, is 59%. What the hell? I don't understand. But, you know, Hronek's in a great spot. He's on a team that is going nuclear with their PDO, right? Their shooting percentage is nuts. So he's going to run into some points. He's got a bomb. He's got a cannon of a shot. So I love that about Hronek. But he's also an elite stash, because if for some reason Quinn Hughes goes down, this guy bumps up to power play one, no questions asked. And that would mean blast off time for Filip Hronek, right? If he's getting that kind of deployment with these players. So I think if you've got him, like, just manage your expectations. What are you expecting from Filip Hronek? He's on a 60-point pace. I think maybe rest of season he goes for a 50-point pace. And that's okay. That feels good to me. So, and he's a beefer. He hits, he does stuff, and, you know, he's going to get some points. So I'm a fan of the player. He's a great real life hockey player too. I love having this guy on our team.
Yeah, I think most of that is about where I'd land Filip Hronek to be. It feels a little bit like Devon Toews from a year or two ago, where he had that great season alongside Kale McCarr. feels a little bit similar in that regard. Yeah, the on-ice shooting percentage at 15%, that is not going to sustain. There's not a snowball's chance in hell that that continues at that level. Even though it's continued at that level for a really long time period now.
Canucks in general. My God. Yeah. How is this sustainable? I don't know.
Yeah, so that'll come down, and that obviously will hurt. This is part of that regression for sure for Hronek. I will say, like, his IPP at 42%, this is a guy who's gated 47, 49, 54, 49, 56. Like, this is a guy who's had quite a high IPP for a defenseman throughout most of his career. So there is some room there that gives you a little bit of, a little bit of hope that it's not just going to all vaporize in a PDO regression bat coming for him. So I like Hronek. I do think that if you expect a 50-point pace, I think you won't be disappointed, basically, with Hronek. And yeah, I do agree that he's a terrific stash. Not a guy that you really will ever feel good about dropping, even if this 5-game cold streak turns into a 10-game cold streak. You're never going to feel good about dropping, because he would be an absolute elite option immediately if Quinn Hughes, knock on wood, was ever to sustain any sort of injury. So I have Hronek in a spot, and I just, like, I can't fathom dropping him. Currently, unless, like, yeah, I just had like the most amazing team ever, and he ended up being the guy on the block in that like streamer spot for me, and I couldn't find a trade. But I do think Hronek is a hold even with this cold streak. Let's move over to another kind of secondary defenseman who has had a cold streak of late. That's Chris Letang, just one assist in his last 5, still skating 26 minutes a night. So it's kind of hard to call him a secondary defenseman in that regard, but still not getting that top power play juice. That's all going to Erik Karlsson. 78th in shots per 60, 35th in shot attempts per 60, 28th in Corsi 4 per 60, 25th in scoring chances 4 per 60 over these 5 games is Chris Letang. On the season now, pacing for 5 goals, 52 points. What's your take on Letang now? We've obviously got a pretty solid sample size. There's been some ups and downs along the way. We had that massive, 6-assist night from Letang at one point. What's your take here? Do you think that this current pace is what we should expect moving forward, or do you think that there's something else going on?
I think, again, similar to Hronek, I don't have high expectations of what Letang should do offensively, like his production, right? He's pacing for 52. If he ends with 52, I'd be stoked, right? Especially considering the fact that he hasn't really had power play one for any, long stretch during the year. I'm such a big fan of this player too. I love Chris Letang. This guy legit had a stroke last season, a stroke. And then he came back and like did stuff. And then, you know, Erik Karlsson gets traded here and he's just like, yeah, no problem. Power play one. Like, this guy's just such a beauty on the team. So, you know, shout out to Chris Letang, but I'm looking at his numbers here. This guy had 21 power play points last season. He has 2 this year, yet he's pacing for the same point total. What a legend. I mean, damn, it's just a guy that's altering his game, a super valuable player. And obviously he hits and blocks. He's a mega beefer. So we like that about Chris Letang. But again, I'm not concerned. Like, yeah, it's been 5 games, 1 assist. The ice time is insane. He's averaging 26 minutes. Like, that's not, you're holding on to a guy like that, right? All this to say, like, I think Chris Letang, definite hold. And he's, again, in that Hronek conversation, like, he's an elite stash. Karlsson goes down, Letang is an immediate going to power play one, and he's going to light it up, right? This is a guy that got over 20 points last year on the power play. So I'm a big fan of the player, and I'm not too concerned. I just think he's had to change his role a little bit with Erik Karlsson in town.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Letang. He was somebody that I had a big projection on at the time. I was projecting for a lot more top power play minutes. They did try that out, but it did go by the wayside pretty quickly, unfortunately. I do think that, yeah, we could have been looking at a pretty big season for Chris Letang, all things considered, if that had happened. You know, it is interesting. I'm just going back over what they did with the power play units. Letang was out with the Crosby Rust Gensel unit. Valtteri Pustin also on that unit. They split up Crosby and Malkin for these units, which is kind of a weird look. But Letang did get first crack there. So that's something to monitor moving forward. I mean, Letang and Karlsson are both rostered, so it's not like you're going out to grab one of these guys on the waiver wire or anything, but it's something to keep an eye on for your roster if you're thinking about dropping Letang, I'm definitely not doing that. He provides so much peripherally, even if he's not scoring points at the moment, that I'm just, I honestly have not thought about Letang once in my lineups all year where I have him. So I don't anticipate that that'll change for me moving forward. Let's kick it over and talk about a couple of young defensemen who've had some ups and downs. Jake Sanderson has just one goal in his last five, but skating almost 25 minutes a night has taken over power play one. He's seventh amongst all defensemen in shots for 60 through this stretch, which is really nice. On the season now, pacing for 13 goals, 44 points. Ottawa has a great schedule next week, so you're not dropping him anytime soon, I don't think. But follow that up with Evan Bouchard, who all of a sudden has just a single assist in his last five, skating 22 and a half minutes a night. But his individual numbers have just fallen off a cliff recently. 156th in shots per 60, 138th in individual scoring chances for per 60. On the season, like, these are way higher. 11th in shots per 60 on the season. Like, this is a very marked difference over the last little bit for Evan Bouchard. On-ice numbers are still pretty strong. 54th in Corsi 4 per 60 is not great, but 14th in scoring chances 4 per 60. But it really does seem like something has shifted here, and not in a good way for Bouchard over the last little bit. So let's talk about these two defensemen. Blake, talk to me first about Bouchard. He's now pacing for 20 goals, 78 points. Do we still think that that's in the cards here, or are you concerned about this last stretch of play?
Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it? Like, his worst stretch of play has been the last little while, and while the Edmonton Oilers are pumping like 15 or 16 straight wins in a row. Mm-hmm. I mean, what, you know, so Jimmy Crackhorn, and I don't care, I mean, in terms of, you know, actual hockey, but for fantasy, it's a head scratcher, isn't it? But no, I'm not concerned. I think, you know, it's going to regress to the mean here, right? This guy's on a 78 point pace. I could absolutely see 70. I think 70 is reasonable for Bouchard this season. You know, Connor McDavid's underachieving weirdly, you know, with his goal scoring, and it feels like they're all just kind of picking it up, right? They're starting to go, and the wins are stacking up. So that said, like, it's something I would like to keep an eye on for sure. Like, is he injured? Maybe, like, is something going on? I can't really put my finger on what's going on there with Evan Bouchard, and no one's really looking because they're winning. Right. So, but these numbers show that, yeah, this is a really bad stretch for Bouchard, because on the season, it's like the exact opposite. This guy's 11th overall in shots and goal per 60 for defensemen. And his on ice numbers are even stupider. He's 6th overall in Corsi 4 per 60, and he's 1st overall in scoring chances 4 per 60 on the season. So damn, that's a player. I think it'll just regress back. This is a valley for him. But in terms of Jake Sanderson, I made some jelly sandies for you. Yeah, we got it's like the exact opposite, isn't it? Like, this stretch, he's playing. They both have 1 point in five games, but yeah, Sanderson's really popping off. And this is an interesting player. He's had peaks and valleys this season too, hasn't he, Nate?
Yep. Yeah, I think it's an interesting comparison at the moment for sure. Sanderson with the individual stats, Bouchard obviously with the team situation, trending in different directions, but getting the same output at the moment. I will say I'm not concerned with Bouchard at the moment, but if this does linger on where he can't seem to pick up the underlying stats, then I'd be concerned. Not that he's a bad player suddenly. Bouchard has always popped under the hood. Even when he wasn't getting these minutes, he always looked very good under the hood, and I expected that he would be good when getting this role. I did not have as big a projection as a lot of people did, just because we hadn't seen it with the IPP mostly. So kudos to him for making me eat crow on my projection on him for sure. But I think that Bouchard, if the shots per 60 don't trend up, if the individual stats don't trend up, then I'm starting to be concerned that this is a real adjustment to an injury or a play style thing that he's being asked to do differently. Something has actually changed. So I am watching it. I'm not going to make any moves based on it yet, because I think that'd be a little bit foolish just given the body of work that we've seen so far. But I am watching it. It's not a player that I thought I'd be watching, but I am watching now. As far as Jake Sanderson goes, it's a nice stretch. I am a little bit concerned about the peaks and the valleys, more so with Jake Sanderson, just because Ottawa is a team with a lot of peaks and valleys, and mostly valleys this year. Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice stretch, but I need him to actually put some pucks in the net. I need Ottawa to figure it out for more than one game at a time. And yeah, I need a few more things to happen for me to be fully bought in on Jake Sanderson for sure. All right, Blake. Well, I will mention for the people that if we didn't talk about a player that they want to hear about, what do they got to do? They got to make sure to join 8 p.m. tomorrow on Monday for the live stream. 8 p.m. EST live stream. I'm doing Puzzling Players. I put out a call in the Apples and Geos Discord server, usually shortly after noon on Mondays, and everybody can submit their Puzzling Players. If you can't get in there, then just join the YouTube stream live, and you'll be able to ask some questions in there. I'm usually able to get to most of those as well. But yeah, if there's a player that you're like, I wish they had talked about this guy, that's your chance. That's your opportunity to get my take on those players. Let's move over to Under the Hood, and the player that I want to highlight here is Thomas Harley. We talked a little bit about Harley in the show on Friday, the Waiver Wire show, but I really want to highlight what he's been able to do. 3 goals, 8 points in his last 5, skating over 22 minutes a night, 6th amongst all defensemen in shots per 60, 10th in shot attempts, 12th in on-ice Corsi 4 per 60, 22nd in on-ice scoring chances 4 per 60. Like, on the season, these numbers are not that far off. He's pacing for 22 goals, 52 points. The time on ice is an arrow pointing up. He's skating on the top pairing with Miro Heiskanen. Obviously, Heiskanen has taken back the top power play unit, so that mutes some of the point potential for Harley, but I really, really like what I'm seeing from Thomas Harley. Over the last 10 games now, he's skating 22-42 average time on ice. Really, I'm looking at it this way. Team situation, big plus. Really, it's only Heiskanen holding him back from, I would say, at least top 20 fantasy production rest of season. And yeah, like, he's just a really good real-life defenseman this year. Like, kind of really maturing into his own this year. 24th amongst all defensemen in Corsi 4 percentage and 31st in scoring chance 4 percentage. And those are with some big minutes, especially as of late. And he's absolutely producing, proving himself up to the task on a good team in Dallas. Really only Heiskanen holding him back. I kind of do view him in a similar light to the guys that we talked about before with Hronek and Letang, that this is a guy with a ton of potential if and when anything happens to the guy in front of them. How do you feel about Harley at the moment?
Yeah, I would echo all that. And I think those are great comparisons. And even we talked about Devin Taves earlier, right? You got Cale Makar there in Colorado, but they got Devin Taves as well. He's good in his own right. And that might be the situation they have here with this guy, because I think he's a gem. Like, he's got 12 goals on the season in 46 games. A defenseman getting double-digit goals is like, that's a boon. That's a revelation. This guy has 12 already. Right. And, you know, Heiskanen wasn't out that long. So, and the fact that he's playing with Heiskanen is going to prop up his floor. Right. That's a really nice piece to see. So, yeah, I'm in on this player for sure. I think he's got to be rostered at this point. And again, he's an elite stash, but the metrics underneath are what we really like as well, isn't it, Nate?
Yeah, for sure. And especially just how young this player is too. Like, really, this is the first season where we're seeing it, and we're seeing it in a big way. And you never know what the ceiling could be beyond this. I'll definitely be in on Harley in my draft next year as well. All right, let's move over to Move of the Week. Blake, take it away. What was your Move of the Week?
Oh God, I wish I had a good one, but I didn't. But you know what? I actually felt really good about my streaming this week. Something Nate and I talk about quite a bit is like what a good streamer Nate is and how that's a part of my game that I'm trying to get better at, right? I know I'm good, but like Nate is really good and I'm trying to up my game to that level. But so this week in particular, I held some moves as I have sometimes a bad habit of using my moves prior to the weekend, right? Prior to Saturday, Sunday, or even Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So in the three leagues that I really care about, I held all my moves. And I was able to make some moves for the weekend to help myself win. You know, we'll see. I'm still waiting on this outcome here. But as an example, I was able to pick up Damon Severson of the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Saturday, Sunday back-to-back with one of my moves. So I was able to get two moves where, yeah, if I would have used those up, like, I just think it's really important to hold moves to give yourself some leeway, unless it's like one of those weeks where all the heavy nights are extremely heavy and all the light nights are extremely light, right? So I'm preaching that you should at least have one move available for your weekend, if not two, so you have some flexibility. And we'll see, you know, I'll let you know in the next Cream of the Crop episode how I did on my matchups, because God dang, oh, this is so frustrating.
All right, for myself, just want to talk about a Cats League strategy. So I had a final pickup for today, Sunday here, up by one win, except down 10 in the saves category. And I was looking at this. My opponent had Decord starting in this game here that's ongoing. I could have picked up Tarasov opposite, but I was looking at that, and I decided to go with Chinikov from Columbus. because the goals category, very close. Power play points category, very close. Shots on goal, still within reach a little bit on the high side to be thinking I could reach there. But if things rolled my way, it could have been the difference. So basically what I was thinking here is, you know, if that matchup, if that game goes the way that I want it to, if Tarasov wins it over Decord, then, you know, I've already got the wins advantage. I'm not gaining a category there, right? And what are the chances that Tarasov makes 10 more saves than Joey Decord? That's probably a pretty slam, unlikely outcome. So give myself a chance in the most categories to make up some ground. Give myself a chance in goals, power play points, shots on goal, make up some ground there. It was a strategy, and it also correlates my outcomes, right? If Joey Decord had a bad game, I mean, we're through two periods now, and he's rocking a shutout. So
don't say it. Oh, you son of a gun. What are you doing, Nate?
Sorry, Blake. I do apologize. That's for hurtful. Jinxing it. The people will know. We won't know, but the people will know when they're listening. If this was a true podcaster's jinx. But regardless, correlate your outcomes, right? If Chinakov randomly has a pop-off game for me, then that's obviously bad for Decord as well. And then overall, that just works out much better for my category league team. So think about that. Think about correlating your outcomes, especially when you're on this Sunday and you're looking for that final stream, that final push in a category or two. These are the kinds of things I think you got to be thinking about. All right. Unfortunately, the last order of business for this here is that we have to recap the head-to-head streamer deathmatch. It was definitely super close. It came right down to the wire. But unfortunately, Sam Bennett did score 28.25 cupful points this week, and Nick Schmaltz scored 7.5. So, Blake, you're back in the driver's seat, up 8-7 in the season-long standings here. This week, we've got your Ross Colton versus my Dylan Strome. And I've had some time to reflect on this, Blake, and I see what you're doing now. I see how you're just trying to toy with my emotions around Ross Colton so that, you know, I can't even be happy for Ross Colton if he does well. I see what you're doing here, and I'm not too thrilled about it in retrospect.
That's right. I'm just undercutting any of your joy, Nate, because that gives me joy. All right. And that's what's important. All right. But yeah, you know what? Sam Bennett Dyson, he's amazing. Nick Schmaltz, stop. He's already dead. Sorry, Nicky Schmaltz. Yeah. I want to tell everybody I gave Nate the option to, get rid of Nick Schmaltz because he had that injury, and he chose to stick with Nick Schmaltz. So shout out to you, Nate. You're a legend.
Yeah, well, I'm going to continue to give you every little bit of help that you can have this year, Blake. So
much needed, much needed.
Oh, man. It's been a fun... this has turned into one of my favorite segments of the year. Just having this little bit of rivalry every week. We have been texting back and forth every time one of our players scores. It's been a fun little side game amidst all of our fantasy craziness this year. So hopefully Dylan Strome pulls it out for me this week and I can tie things back up. All right, that's all we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band They're There for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it, folks. Much love.